Saturday edition of Hockey Unfiltered with Todd Lewis is flying by here to the top of the hour in advance of six games on the Saturday NHL schedule. A busy one. We'll be back again tomorrow, 11 Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. Check us out at hockeyunfiltered.com. Also streaming live on the Hockey Unfiltered app, which you can download at the App Store. At Hockey Unfiltered, at Todd Lewis Sports, the Twitter and Instagram handles to follow us. Busy Saturday, but I'm anxious and looking forward to talking to our next guest. He is the author of our book of the month. We designate a book that we think is interesting and worthwhile and encourage you to check out every month. And this month, it is the California Golden Seals, a tale of white skates, red ink, and one of the NHL's most outlandish teams. The author is Stephen Currier, and he joins us on the line now. Steve, thanks for the time today. We appreciate it. And what was the motivation to explore this brief but colorful history, we'll say, of the California Golden Seals?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons why I thought it was an interesting team, but I think one of the reasons is I have a sort of morbid fascination, I think, with failure for some reason. I find old defunct franchises to be very interesting, whether it's like the World Hockey Association or the American Basketball Association or the St. Louis Browns or any of these other teams. But the Seals just seem to be probably the pinnacle of weirdness and failure. And even as a kid, I would find these old hockey cards with their uniforms, and they were very brightly colored and the strange looking logo on the front. So I think seeing a lot of these old photos and just little blurbs once in a while, hearing about white skates and the eccentric owners and just the inability to really do anything much in the standings. Like every year was a struggle. And I think I just always had to find out why was this team always had such a hard time to get by. And it just started with a few little, a little bit of research that I would do as a teenager, looking through an old media guide that I got from the NHL offices, and when the internet came around, being able to do a little bit more in-depth research, and then as I got into my 20s and early 30s, and I was able to find these like newspaper archives online, where I was able to get some real good information and some interesting answers to all the questions I had. So it was a bit of a combination of all of that really persuaded me to start doing the research. And then once I started getting really into it, it just kind of developed into a book.
The thinking, I guess, of the NHL at the time was to expand west. There would be a natural connection in terms of geography with the Los Angeles Kings, who also had pretty outlandish uniforms at that particular time. And maybe that's why the California Golden Seals went with the color scheme that they chose. But I almost wonder, because the Sharks have been such a successful franchise too, that it was just an idea that was almost a bit too far ahead of its time, that we weren't as connected as we are now. The LA Kings were kind of the lone franchise out west, and this was another, trying to put another stake in the ground, if you will, with the California Golden Seals.
Yeah, there was a reason why they put the Seals in Oakland, because before expansion came along, the Seals had a very successful minor league team in the Western Hockey League. So that was one of the reasons why they thought it would be a great idea to put a team in San Francisco. That's where the team was originally, in the Western Hockey League. They were actually very good. They won two championships in the Western Hockey League, and their attendance was actually one of the best in the league, ahead of other places where you'd think that the attendance would be higher. There would be more of a hockey market, but the Seals did quite well in San Francisco. So I think that was one of the reasons why they thought putting an NHL team there would make a lot of sense. Not to mention the fact that the NHL television contract in '67 demanded that there be a team in Los Angeles and in the Bay Area. So if the NHL wanted to have any extensive television coverage with these new franchises coming in, they almost had to put a team in the Bay Area. So it was kind of a combination of those factors that convinced the league that San Francisco was a good location for a team. I think the Seals could have been a success at the time they were there. The market had proven to be capable of sustaining a team. Like Los Angeles, maybe in the beginning their attendance wasn't as high as it is now, but there were definitely reasons why a team could be successful in those markets. I think one of the big factors was the ownership was not very competent in some times. like when Charlie Finley came in and he decided to give these give his team these bright yellow uniforms and yellow skates, yellow and green skates at first, and then white skates. He was very cheap, so he let a lot of his players go to the World Hockey Association instead of giving them a little bit of a raise in salary. So the Seals definitely had they could have been successful where they were. There was definitely the elements in place to be successful. They had lots of really good players who went on to have excellent careers elsewhere, but because of, I think, sometimes managerial incompetence and this kind of cheap ownership or ownership that just didn't really seem to care very much about the team, that's what really doomed them to failure. LA had a little bit more, I guess, a better structure, and they had a bit more stability at the top, so I think that's one of the reasons why they managed to survive as long as they did. And then once they kind of got out of the woods and got out of those initial years, they were able to actually build on that and survive long enough to get Gretzky, and then from there they just kind of took off.
Steve Currier is our guest. He is the author of California Golden Seals, Tale of White Skates and Red Ink. So the common denominator of good management, good ownership is something that has proven to be successful in whatever sports league and continues to this day. But some of the choices and decisions that were made, you alluded to, the Charlie Finley with, and I guess I understand the thinking that, look, he had a successful baseball team. Maybe he can own a hockey team and there will be synergies and it'll all come together. But he let his baseball team wither away too. But as opposed to the yellow, the California Golden Seals also wore white skates. And now I look at the Vegas Golden Knights and they're wearing white gloves. It's not quite the white skates thing. And they didn't actually paint the white gloves, but they painted the skates of the California Golden Seals players white because they thought that would be part of the team identity, except they had to keep painting them and they got heavier and heavier as the season went along.
Yeah, that's what a lot of the players said. I wasn't sure if the players were just kind of kidding when they said that, but and I asked them repeatedly, and I think they were very serious about it when I'd say, like, you know, with the truth, the white skates got heavier, and said, yeah, like, because when you get scuff marks and puck marks on the skates, they wouldn't look pristine anymore. And Finley insisted that the skates be like perfectly white, so trainers would have to take latex house paint of all things, and they would paint the skates over. And especially in the first season, they had them in 71-72. You could even find pictures of the team just skating around, and they're bright white skates. They almost disappear when you see them on the ice surface. The year after, I think they put a little bit of green on the skates, so it kind of stood out a little bit differently. But that first year, they were bright white, and the players would say that they would get heavier and heavier because they're just putting a layer over another layer over another layer. And I'm not sure if this was something I kind of thought of after I wrote the book, but I'm not really sure if it had any significance. But it seems that when the white skates came in January of 72, the Seals were actually doing quite well that year. They were in a playoff position. As soon as the skates came in, a few weeks after that, you can see the team was starting to lose more and more regularly, and towards the end of the season, the last month, they barely won any games at all. So was it because the white skates were getting so heavy that they were losing, literally losing a foot, a step or two on other teams? It might have been, but it certainly seemed coincidental that when the skates were getting heavier and heavier, the team seemed to be losing more and more games.
It's funny how outrageous things like this happened in that era. It doesn't really happen anymore when new teams come in as expansion franchises from other leagues. But just hearing these stories is sensational. Are the players and people that you talked with for the book okay with it now? I mean, at the time, I'm sure they were incredibly frustrated, but enough time has passed, I guess, that they can kind of chuckle and laugh about it now.
Oh yeah, most of them had some interesting stories about it. Marshall Johnson, who was one of their players, and he later became one of their coaches. He was telling me about a story about he was in, I think it was in Boston one time, and some guy hollered down from the crowd and said, "Hey Johnson, where's your purse?" So players used to get comments like that too. Gilles Meloche used to say they used to be called sissies and figure skaters, and it was pretty rough at the time for them, I think. But now they look back and they kind of laugh. Morris Mott, who I talked to in, for the book as well, he still has his pair of white skates, the white with the green trim skates. He still has those at home. I think he donated another pair to the Hall of Fame. So the players now look back on it. The Finley green luggage that he gave to all the players, the ugly green jacket that the players all wear on the road, the white also. The players kind of look back on it now and say, like, this was just a crazy, weird roller coaster ride. Thank God we're not having to do anything to do with it anymore. But it was interesting at the time, but thank God we don't have to do it now. And it's fun to look back on it now, though.
Yeah, now, of course, this would never get off the ground now. But how they actually used live seals as mascots?
This was something that Finley thought would be a great idea. And when he first bought the team in 1970, he thought it would be a great idea to have a live seal mascot. He had some sort of weird obsession with animals, it seemed. He had, his famous mule, Charlie O, that he would parade out during Oakland A's games. And he thought he would be able to get himself a live seal to go out on center ice before the games, and the kids would love it, and this would be a great little mascot. Well, of course, as you know, seals are used to living in very cold climates, so when the seal would be on the ice, he just laid there because he was very comfortable, no matter how many kids were in the crowd. So, that was the end of the seal mascot pretty quickly, because the seal just wasn't going to do anything. He was just going to lay on the ice anyway.
That's amazing. That's just remarkable. And all of this stuff took place over a relatively short period of time too, before the franchise moved on and eventually landed in another city. That's the other part, is that this was a very short window that the Seals existed.
Oh yeah. And the book covers, I think, a total of 17 years. It covers their 6 years in the Western League very briefly. And then their 9 years in Oakland, and then the 2 years in Cleveland, and then the aftermath when the Cleveland Barons merged with the Minnesota North Stars. So it was a very, very short period of time. That being said, there really isn't a lot of information or even photos in different books and elsewhere. There really isn't a lot of information out there and photographic evidence. So you really have to dig deep and to find any kind of proof that the team existed. The team has really been buried in history. They're overshadowed, obviously, by the Philadelphia Flyers, the Montreal Canadiens, the Boston Bruins, and the others. And so they were there for quite a long time when you think about it, a good 17 years or so, but there isn't a lot of proof out there. You really have to dig deep on the internet and in books to just find proof that they did exist, in fact.
Steve Currier is the author, our guest. Author of the book California Golden Seals, Tale of White Skates, Red Ink, and one of the NHL's most outlandish teams. We appreciate the time, Steve. Thank you for this. We're looking forward to diving deeper into the book. We'll be talking about it all month as our book of the month, and enjoy the success that you'll generate from it. We appreciate the time today.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, and hope you have a great day.
I appreciate it. Steve Currier, the author. The name of the book, again, The California Golden Seals, Tale of White Skates, Red Ink, and one of the NHL's most outlandish teams. The funny thing now is Seals logo, memorabilia, whether it's hats or T-shirts, still sell and still have, there's almost a kind of cult following. In fact, I bought a Seals hat, I think it was, for my nephew a few years ago for his birthday. He thought it was the greatest thing. Just, oh yeah, that's great, California Golden Seals. But having the live Seals out on the ice as a mascot. I can just see these big lumbering Seals, because they have them out on the West Coast and in San Francisco and out on the piers. You can see them, but having these big giant Seals out on the ice, it's, oh, when animals and live animals and NHL teams and events, or hockey teams and events, it can go wrong pretty quickly. There was a great one a couple of years ago. It was the Bakersfield Condors, who had, of course, a live condor out on the ice. And during the national anthem, it kind of got loose and went over to the bench to visit the players. And the players weren't too keen on this thing flying and landing on their bench. Oh, yeah. But the name of the book, again, California Golden Seals, Tale of White Skates, Red Ink, and one of the NHL's most outlandish teams. The author is Steve Currier. We'll squeeze in as much as we can in our final segment up to the top of the hour at Hockey Unfiltered, at Todd Lewis Sports. We'll have our Dog of the Day winner for today. We'll get you set for a 9-game Saturday schedule and much more, coming right back after the break.